Radio Prague News.
The Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Jan Kohout, has praised Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his unprecedented backing for the creation of a Palestinian state. Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has arrived in London to discuss next week's EU Leaders Summit with his British counterpart Gordon Brown, and the national deficit of the Czech Republic has reached 1 trillion crowns, up 1 billion since the start of 2009. Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs Jan Kohout on Monday praised Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for his unprecedented backing for the creation of a Palestinian state. Speaking at a meeting of EU foreign ministers in Luxembourg, Mr. Kohout called the statement a step in the right direction, but added that the details of his proposal would have to be further analyzed. In a key policy speech Sunday evening, Mr. Netanyahu said for the first time that he would support the creation of a Palestinian state, provided such a state would recognize Israel as the homeland of the Jewish people. The Israeli Prime Minister also said that any independent Palestinian state would have to be demilitarized, a condition that many have said would entail not a Palestinian state, but an Israeli protectorate. Czech Prime Minister Jan Fischer has arrived in London for a brief visit, during which he will meet with his British counterpart, Gordon Brown. Talks are expected to center on the agenda of this week's EU Leaders Summit, the last big event to be held under the Czech EU presidency. The Czech Prime Minister held a similar meeting with French President Nicolas Sarkozy on Friday. The national deficit of the Czech Republic has grown by nearly 1 billion crowns since the start of this year. Data from the first quarter of 2009, released by the Ministry of Finance, puts the country's deficit at 1 trillion Czech crowns, or 96,000 crowns per citizen. The ministry has also raised the amount it expects to borrow this year. While the state deficit management and financing strategy from December estimated loans of nearly 150 billion for 2009, the amount now required due to the global financial crisis is expected to equal some 280 billion crowns. The centre-right party Top 09, launched last week by former finance minister Miroslav Kalousek, says it is receiving hundreds of requests for membership. A flash poll conducted by the STEM Research Centre at the weekend suggested that the new party could receive as much as 40% voter support in the early elections scheduled to take place in October. Top 09 is currently being led by former Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg, who held that post on behalf of the Green Party and is consistently ranked one of the country's most popular politicians. Turning for a look at the weather, conditions in the capital are currently warm and partly cloudy at 28 degrees Celsius. The coming days around the Czech Republic are expected to be warm with partly cloudy skies and a chance of showers on Tuesday. I'm Christian Falvey, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Richter, and this is what's coming up in the show. More neo-Nazis arrested as the police take action against extremist rallies over the weekend. Czech authorities plan to retaliate for what they call harassment of Czech citizens in Germany. We have the latest news from Czech sports, and later we meet Prague-born Rudy Linka, one of the world's greatest jazz guitarists, who every summer brings some of the best musicians around to the squares of the Czech Republic.
I know the guys who can really make some good music, and I feel like, wow, it would be so great to have these guys to play in this amazing environment of these beautiful towns.
All this and more coming up, so stay with us. The rise in political extremism in the Czech Republic has been at the center of media attention in recent weeks, and the past weekend was no exception. In the wake of the biggest ever police operation against the country's ultra-right groups, far-right radicals took to the streets in a number of towns and cities to protest against the arrest of 10 neo-Nazis. Daniela Lazarová has the story.
Nedezbírejte! Nedezbírejte! Co udělal? Nic neudělal! Riot police in action in the town of Most, where they detained 14 people, among them the deputy leader of the far-right Workers' Party, Petr Kotáp. Neo-Nazis also marched through Havlíčkův Brod, Mladá Boleslav, Jablonec nad Nisou and Zlín, where they clashed with anarchists. Expecting trouble, the police were out in force in all those locations and well prepared to deal with a predicted backlash from far-right supporters. Protesters were detained for wearing Nazi symbols, for making the Hitler salute, or shouting race-hate slogans. After months of turning a blind eye to these violations of the law, the police are cracking down on offenders with unexpected force. Interior Minister Martin Pecina told journalists over the weekend that he was determined to see the far-right Workers' Party outlawed before the caretaker government's short term in office ends.
The proposal to have the Workers' Party outlawed should be ready for approval by the end of August, and we expect the Supreme Administrative Court to get it by mid-September.
The 10 extremists arrested in Tuesday's police raids have all been charged with promoting a movement aimed at suppressing rights and freedoms. If found guilty, they face up to 8 years in prison. Those detained over the weekend could face similar charges. On taking office in May, interim Prime Minister Jan Fischer said the fight against extremism would be one of his top priorities, and he is clearly standing by his word, even though it means his family and that of Interior Minister Martin Pecina have been given police protection. The Prime Minister is believed to be a potential target not just because he ordered the crackdown on extremists, but because of his Jewish origin. Attending Saturday's commemorative gathering in memory of the Lidice massacre by the Nazis, the Prime Minister said he was greatly disturbed by what was happening in society.
I hear strange voices of late from unexpected quarters, and I read disturbing things. You know, this is how it all began, and Lidice is a reminder of how it could end.
Paradoxically, it emerged right there that right-wing extremism is not the only problem. The commemorative ceremony, attended by the country's top officials, was unexpectedly disrupted by left-wing extremists, who unfurled a banner with the image of the Marxist revolutionary Che Guevara and the flag of the recently outlawed Communist Youth Union. Unlike in the case of far-right activists, the police seemed uncertain what to do and failed to take action against the intruders. Amidst the rise in extremism, one thing is positive. The need to deal with a problem has united politicians on this issue at least, and the country's interim prime minister is showing that he is far from the wimp many believed him to be.
Daniela Lazarová with that report. Now, 1.5 years after the Czech Republic's entry into the border-free Schengen zone, its citizens are still falling victim to discriminatory police checks on the German side of the border. That is what the Czech Interior Ministry insists. Now, the ministry is planning a system of retaliatory tit-for-tat measures in a bid to make German police change their tack. Rosie Johnston has more.
Allegations that German police are harassing Czech travellers on the German side of the border are nothing new. Last April, former Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek spoke out against the disproportionately high number of supposedly random checks that, he said, Czech citizens were falling victim to across the border. At the time, the German embassy denied the allegations. On Saturday, it said that nothing had changed. Here's what spokesman Sebastian Gerhardt had to say to Radio Prague back then.
The controls the German police does are strictly according to the regulatories of the Schengen Codex. And we do it, of course, on the basis of a random examination. Also, German citizens are included in these examinations. Therefore, we don't see a harassment, but we see a necessary control in order to strengthen a space of freedom, security and rule of law within the European Union.
Over a year and several complaints to the European Union later, and the Czech Interior Ministry has had enough. The ministry's Šárka Mahotková says the German embassy has just got it plain wrong.
We do not agree with this statement because we know that German authorities rely on the Schengen Schengen Borders Code, but we think that certain parts of the code are not really applied in practice, in the meaning that we consider the checks carried out by German customs and police authorities as being equivalent to border checks. So we think that they are not only equivalent, but they are even carried out in a worse or even more strict than the border checks used to be carried out once the German-Czech border used to be the non-Schengen external border.
Over the past year and a half, the Czech Interior Ministry has received around 60 complaints from Czechs who said they were treated in a humiliating or demeaning way by German police. According to Šárka Mahotková, Czechs have been singled out by German police either by their number plates or when travelling on public transport. One such Czech is René Kmetjová, who was stopped when travelling to Germany this May with her 16-year-old stepdaughter.
There were Australians, there were Japanese, and of course lots and lots of Germans in the train. And the police opened the door to each compartment and said, "Are there any Czechs in here?" And when they didn't find any other Czechs, they came back to us and wanted to check our identity documents for the second time. So we showed them our passports and our ID cards again. They had already checked our backpacks, so they didn't do that, but this time they wanted to check our pockets. Then they went away. By that time, I didn't know where we were, so I asked them when we would get to Furtwängerwald, and they said we'd missed that stop.
According to Mrs. Kmetjová, this gave the police the idea to check her and her stepdaughter's tickets, which were only valid as far as Fort Invald. The pair were taken to a police station and detained for travelling with invalid tickets. It's this and other such stories which have prompted the Interior Ministry to act. They say new checks will come into place here in the coming months. Here's Šárka Mahotková again.
We have been waiting for a long time because we have been monitoring the situation, trying to negotiate with our German partners to find out the measures that would be acceptable and in full compliance with the Schengen rules from our point of view. So at some stage, or about a month ago, we came to the conclusion that there is no way how to ensure this balance in other ways than in applying certain measures. We have no other chance to hopefully try to find some change and to put forward some change on the German side of the borders.
The ministry won't say exactly what sort of checks they plan to introduce, but they hope that sooner or later such actions will succeed where dialogue has failed.
Thank you, Rosie Johnson, for that story. Coming up next is the latest news from the world of Czech sport with Ian Willoughby.
The fastest man the world has ever seen is currently in the Czech Republic. Yes, Jamaican sprinter Usain Bolt is here for the Zlatá tetra, or Golden Spike, in Ostrava, the country's biggest athletics meeting. In fact, the triple Olympic champion described the Golden Spike as one of his favourite events. Bolt has previously performed twice in the 200 metres in Ostrava. This time he'll take part in the 100 metres during Wednesday's meeting. Among the other athletic stars set to appear at the Golden Spike are America's Michelle Perry in the 100 metres hurdles, Deron Robles from Cuba in the 110 metres hurdles, Croatian high jumper Blanka Vlasic, and Ethiopian long distance runner Dira Tuna, who last year set the world 1 hour record in Ostrava with a distance of 18.517 kilometres. Home fans will also be able to cheer on the Czech javelin star Barbara Špatáková, who last year took Olympic gold and set a new world record. Motorsport and Czechs Tomáš Enge and Jan Charos, alongside Germany's Stefan Mücke, finished fourth in the world-famous Le Mans 24-hour race on Sunday. The Aston Martin Racing Eastern Europe team was the highest placed among competitors without diesel engines, and Enge said they'd known in advance they couldn't compete with the diesel cars. Nevertheless, the Liberec-born driver said fourth place in the 77th Le Mans 24-hour was almost as good as a win. The Czech ice hockey wing Petr Sikora has been enjoying the second Stanley Cup triumph of his career. After the Pittsburgh Penguins beat Detroit Red Wings on Friday to take the best of seven final playoffs series, Sikora had been dropped by the Penguins for over a month when he was picked for Game 6. However, he only lasted a few minutes on the ice after breaking his foot when he dove to block a shot. Nevertheless, that didn't stop him from taking part in the celebrations that followed Friday's victory. Sikora, who's 32, becomes a free agent on the 1st of July, and there seems to be a good chance he will leave the Penguins. That's all the sport for today.
That was Ian Willoughby with the latest Czech sports news. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where in the final part of our program, Ian Willoughby talks to jazz musician Rudy Linka in this week's edition of One on One.
This is Stephanie's New Waltz by the world-renowned Prague-born jazz guitar player Rudy Linka. After moving to Sweden as a young man, he later left for the US and has been living in New York for nearly a quarter of a century. In recent years, however, Rudy Linka has been home in the Czech Republic every summer, organizing the Bohemia Jazz Fest, a great free event which brings world-class jazz musicians to a number of Czech towns and cities. We met at Café Slavia, one of the haunts of his teenage years.
I started to play violin when I was six, and, you know, my family, everybody in my family played instruments. It was either piano or violin, and I got in touch with the guitar when I was 13. And that was when I was actually at the camp, and there was a guy who played really, really good, and he was really a professional player, and he somehow just happened to be there, and I fell in love with the instrument, and also the guy was so friendly and so much fun to be with, and from that moment I kind of started to, you know, listen to Beatles and try to play those songs, and very early on I actually got into jazz because I met really good friends who were just crazy about jazz, and I started with Miles Davis, and I basically jump over this whole thing about rock and roll, and so.
Is there a big tradition of jazz here? I know the generation of people like Shvoretsky, who are older than you, they were into jazz. But from your generation, was there a big tradition of jazz in this country?
You know, I think so. I think the communists, because, I mean, Shvoretsky, he grew up, you know, during the Nazis, and the Nazis, the jazz was totally forbidden. I mean, it was these pamphlets were saying that, you know, the solo cannot have, you know, more than three swing notes, you know, and, you know, all these crazy things. And I think the communists kind of, for obvious reasons, that they really didn't encourage jazz at all. And I think that was a big attraction to it through, you know, intellectual people, and I remember, you know, people like Karel Velebný, who was really, you know, a great mentor to me and a great teacher, and around him was always a lot of young people. But also American Embassy, they had a culture center. You just walked in, they had all the magazines, they had all the LPs, and you could borrow three LPs at a time, and you had them for a week. After you returned them, and you taped them home at the tape recorder, you returned them, you pick another ones. And I had really kind of good jazz collection through the American Embassy in the 70s.
In, I guess, about 79, 80, you, at the age of 19 or 20, moved to Sweden. Why Sweden?
First, I didn't know nothing about Sweden. And I was already studying German for 9 years, so I knew that I don't speak German. And it's also, you know, the historical thing about Czech Republic and Germany and Austria, I mean, there was always a lot of tensions. But there was never any tensions with Sweden, and Sweden always had a great jazz. And also, a very good friend of mine stayed in Stockholm. And he was a saxophone player who went to Karel Velebný also, so I knew that I have friends somewhere who I can stay with, so I went to Sweden.
And later you went to America. What was it about America? Was it a work thing that you knew you had to go to the States to get somewhere?
You know, I was in Sweden for 5 years, and I also left Czech Republic because I wanted to study jazz. And somehow I was naively, you know, thinking that once you cross the line, you know, for the Iron Curtain, that you would immediately, there would be a lot of jazz groups all over the place. But this was not the case in the 70s and early 80s. And so I came to Stockholm, and there basically I started to study classical music again, which I was doing even here on at the Prague Conservatory. And I start to understand that if you want to do jazz, and if you want to really learn it, you have to go to the United States, because these guys played so much better. I mean, it's just like, even in Sweden, I mean, when these guys showed up, I mean, they were just like, I mean, on totally different level than the Swedish guys. And the Swedish guys were very good. And so I, after 5 years, I got a scholarship to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and I went there for a year. And after that, I got another scholarship to New School in New York, and I studied there for 2 years, and after that, I basically stayed in the United States.
I understand also that a meeting with, or you getting to know, the great guitar player John Scofield was a big thing in your life and career.
I was so lucky that I studied with some really amazing guys. John was one of them. Jim Hall was another guy. And John Abercrombie was another guy. I mean, these guys were just really, really nice to me. And when I met John for the first time, I mean, he came to Berklee. He was doing a clinic. And I, you know, after that, I went, you know, and asked him if he could give me some private lessons. And he said, you know, when you are in New York, you know, give me a call. And that was just when he left Miles Davis. And he was not so busy with his own band. And so I was so lucky that I had like 20 lessons with him in his basement.
Also, jumping forward in time, you guys somehow ended up busking on Charles Bridge, the two of the greatest jazz guitar players, playing for free on Charles Bridge.
That was really funny, because we went on vacation to Prague. That was, I think it was 2000 or 2001. And John's wife, she is, you know, she bought a book about Prague, and she was studying the book. And in the book was that all the musicians are playing at Charles Bridge, you know, and it's just like, this is the thing to do. And she said to us before we left, she said, guys, do you know what you do? You take two guitars and you play at Charles Bridge, and let's see how much money you make. And for that money, we will go and have a dinner. And we cannot spend one dime more than what you made. So we had our, you know, two acoustic guitars, and we went to Charles Bridge, and we sat down right in the middle, and they took out these guitars and started to play. And the moment we started to play, so it was a little crowd around us, because it was people who were watching us and thinking like, no, this is not happening. These guys look like some, you know, somebody. But also immediately, these two police officers showed up and started to ask, you know, if we have the permit to do that, you know. And of course we didn't. And I was pretending that I don't speak Czech, and John was totally honest, saying I don't speak Czech. Of course they didn't speak English, and it was really, they just wanted to take us to the police station. And luckily enough, it was a TV, Czech TV, walking by, because they were filming something on the other side. So they were walking by, and they started to film this. And this Czech reporter said to these police, and these guys are really famous. And this whole thing was caught on TV, on the tape, and they showed it on the main news the same day. And it was really funny. And so what happened is that the police said, okay, you can play one song. So we played one song. We didn't make any money because we didn't have the permit. And we almost got arrested. But, you know, it was one of the most bizarre periods in my life, I think.
And you had no dinner that day either,
right? Yeah, we had no dinner, of course, you know, but, yeah.
Tell us also, a few years ago, you set up the Bohemia Jazz Fest, which is a touring jazz festival. You play in 6 or 7 Czech cities and towns every summer. How did that come about?
Well, you know, it started 6 years ago when I bought a house close to Prachatice, which is a tiny little town in southern Bohemia, beautiful town. It's on the border with Germany. And I really fell in love with that little farmhouse and started to renovate this. And I renovated just when I was here in Czech Republic. It was the first time in a long time when I suddenly came and spent 2 months here. And these 2 months, you know, it was amazing for me, because in some way I kind of returned home without returning home. But these 2 months really opened my eyes, because I realized that, you know, people are so nice, the food is great, the nature is unbelievable, but the music which they play on the radio, it's terrible. I mean, it's just, I couldn't find a station, you know, and it's just like, and suddenly I realized that I'm so lucky, because I know the guys who can really make some good music, and I feel like, wow, it would be so great to have these guys to play in this amazing environment of these beautiful towns.
You don't have any trouble persuading world-renowned musicians to come and play in a little town like Prakatice.
You know, this is really funny because it's always helped to know the guys, you know, so it's kind of, okay, let's how do we do this, you know, and I can promise them, okay, it's just, so the pay is terrible, but let's do a massage in, a you know, some other town. Let's do this, let's do that. And, you know, so the guys went for it. There are also some people who were extremely skeptical. I remember last year we had Tuck and Patty. I don't know if you know these guys. They are from California. Really, he plays guitar, she sings. Tuck Andrew is amazingly good guitar player, really virtuoso solo, you know, jazz guitar player. And so they were coming to Prachatice, to play in Prachatice. And I remember the contract was, okay, we don't want to come with our own car because we are not really sure that we will have the car, you know, after the night, you know. And they were so afraid. So they booked themselves to Linz. They were staying in a hotel in Linz. And we would just come and pick them up and we would drive them, you know, for the gig. And after, we would drive them back. And they would have a dinner in Linz, you know, because they wanted their shrimp cocktail, you know, and vegetarian things. So we picked them up, drove them to Prachatice. In Prachatice was this amazing crowd of 4,000 people standing, you know, waiting for them. The concert was totally amazing. They stayed in the hotel in Prachatice, which was like, you know, 2 stars hotel. In the contract they had, the hotel has to be deluxe, 5-star boutique hotel. Have they even a boutique? And they stayed in this little dive in Prachatice because they just had so much fun. So they couldn't really leave immediately. And I just feel like, well, even that is great that the festival works the other way also. It's almost like, you know, these two sides are discovering themselves. And I'm for sure that Tuck and Patty, after they left, so they are, you know, telling many friends all over how much fun it was, this tiny little town in Prachatice. And they actually will play in Prague in the fall because it was such a big success. And now they are just like, Czech Republic is the place to go.
That edition of One on One with Rudy Linka brings us to the end of today's show here on Radio Prague. If you feel like commenting on anything you've heard in today's program, or if you have any questions for us, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can write us a letter to Vinohradská 12 12099 Prague 2 or send an email to english@radio.cz. But for now, for myself, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.